Right now, on Last Call, is the AI air coming out of the AI trade? The move in a couple of key stocks that could be signaling a shift. Elon Musk showing senior leadership the door. Why other companies could follow his, quote, hardcore approach. Carvana booming. Shares up 40% now. We'll tell you the number that is making investors so happy. A major crack in a major real estate market. We have got the state and the numbers you got to hear. Plus, is the stock market starting to price in a Donald Trump victory? The curious moves in a number of stocks that has caught the eye of Tom Lee. And Mario Carbone joins the show as consumers. Well, are they still resilient? We're going to talk high-end dining and the rise of the private restaurant. All that and more over the hour, so belly up to that delicious stuff and buckle up. Last Call is up right now. Hi, everybody. Good to see you. Well, I can't see you, but you could see me or maybe hear me. I'm Brian Sullivan. All that and more coming up in the hour. But first up on Last Call, is this a case of see no evil, hear no evil? Fed Chairman Jay Powell says he does not see the S word. No, not that. Stagflation anywhere in the American economy.
With inflation, you know, we will return inflation to 2%. And that won't be, so I don't see the stag or the inflation.
Now, Powell's remarks come after the Fed kept borrowing costs steady, despite data pointing to stickier inflation recently. While Powell does not know when interest rate cuts will come, he pretty much did rule out interest rate hikes.
I think it's unlikely that the next policy rate move will be a hike. I'd say it's unlikely.
I mean, unlikely is the Fed's way of saying no. All right. Now, investors initially loved Powell's comments. You can see the S&P 500 popped, but eventually it fell and closed in the red. Now, remember, this is the same Federal Reserve that thought inflation was transitory. It is the same Federal Reserve that kept borrowing costs at record lows in late 2020 and into 2021, even though probably more than half of the American economy was fully back open and running at full steam, even in the summer and fall of 2020. I mean, if you live in Texas, Florida, much of the South, the upper Midwest, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Life was relatively normal. But most Fed officials, as smart as they are, live in D.C. or New York or San Francisco, areas that stayed closed, locked down, even as much of the country opened back up. In other words, did the Fed completely misread the American economy, kept printing money, and stoked inflation? Well, inflation that is now starting to slam the consumer and companies. If you missed it, we talked about it last night. Companies beginning to warn en masse about a weaker consumer. Today, Starbucks CEO said they have seen regular customers pull back. And as a result, that stock got crushed down 16%. Similar story with Yum Brands, that, of course, the parent company of Pizza Hut and KFC and Taco Bell. They're down 4% right now. And it is not just food. It was an ugly day for cosmetics giant Estee Lauder. The company said, quote, macroeconomic headwinds will hurt sales. That stock fell 13%. And CVS, the drugstore chain, had its worst day in the stock market in more than 14 years, down 17%. After it slashed its profit outlook. Walgreens, by the way, is down 60% in the last year. So here is the question that we are asking ourselves and our guests and you tonight. Is the Federal Reserve missing the mark in its fight against inflation? For more on what the Fed and it all means to you and your money, let's bring in Peter Malouk. He is the president and CEO of Creative Planning, where he works with tens of thousands of high net worth individuals. And Creative Planning, frequently ranked as one of, if not the, top-ranked wealth management firm in America. Peter, Jay Powell's a lot smarter than I'll ever be. And they got 400 PhDs working at the Federal Reserve. But I hope my point, our point, was made, which is that it just feels sometimes like there is a gigantic moat disconnect between what the Federal Reserve is maybe seeing and saying and what your clients and people living in wide swaths of America are feeling?
First, great to be back. One of my absolute favorites. You're a blast to follow here and online. But you know, you were talking about some of the recent mistakes, you know, Powell made, and really there was one big grand mistake that I think is going to be studied in economics books probably for 100 plus years, and that was the response to COVID in the first place. And we basically, you know, opened a textbook and said, "Oh, no one's working and no one's buying stuff, so we have to lower rates dramatically." Well, it was like there was a blizzard. Everyone was inside. Everyone thought they were going to die. And when the blizzard was gone and the streets were clear and everyone went back outside, we knew we weren't going to die. So they went back outside and we spent. We didn't need the super low rates you were talking about earlier. And every single move since then has been trying to unwind this grand mistake. Yeah. And he made a mistake about inflation, like you just said earlier, passing. But they also made a mistake even this year saying, "Hey, we expect multiple rate cuts this year." So look, I don't believe anything he says. I don't think he's malicious. I don't think he knows. Nobody knows. Economy is very dynamic. And I think we're going to see a lot more missteps. That's been the rule along the way.
I don't think there's anything malicious about Jay Powell. I mean, after all, he likes the Grateful Dead. How malicious could he be? And the point I was making was not that the response at the beginning of COVID, because I don't want to go back and rewrite history, wasn't correct. The first 6 months, absolute pure terror. I live in New Jersey. We were the first hit. Totally get it. But when I went to restaurants in Houston and Miami and Charleston, because I never stopped traveling in the fall of 2020, and there was a 2-hour wait and it was packed and car dealers were selling everything they could, I get it that a lot of the economy wasn't like that. But when I saw this with my own eyes multiple times that I would post it, to your point, I'm thinking, what the hell is the Fed talking about?
I'm watching my clients buy second homes and boats and planes, and they're keeping rates at record lows. It made absolutely no sense. And it's really trying to recover from that has been very tough. And I think we've got a really interesting situation here, because you've got the Americans that are struggling, have credit card debt. They're now at 25-year highs. They're really suffering there. They're not going to get a break till there's a rate cut. Average American that's in a home wants to move. If you have a mortgage, forget it. Because if you leave your house, you're going to get rid of your 2.5% mortgage. You're going to go to a 7 or 8% mortgage. Everyone's paralyzed. If you're a new home buyer, forget it. You know, the homes are now priced out of your way. A mortgage is about double what it was just a couple years ago. And a lot of wealthier people are invested in real estate. And you look at what's happening in commercial real estate, a lot of people hanging on month to month. They're upside down. The properties are worth less than what they paid for them, hoping for those tax cuts that Powell was talking about earlier this year. Not going to happen. It's going to be really interesting to see how much longer some of these regionals can hang on to. We're seeing a lot of mergers and acquisitions in that space as banks try to get bigger. Because if this continues, I think 3 or 4 more quarters, I think we've pushed off the consequences about as far as we can.
You know, stagflation. I heard Steve Leishman today, and I totally agree with my friend Steve. I don't think stagflation is here. A lot of people that are sort of, you know, out there in the canary in the coal mine saying it's here, and Powell saying he sees neither the stag nor the flation. I don't think he sees the stag, but I think the inflation certainly is there. But when you look at some of the data, you got ISM manufacturing down 7 months in a row. We're seeing consumer confidence start to fall. I'm not saying the economy is weak. The economy is still strong if you're an asset owner, as we have talked about.
That's
but
correct.
For all the middle class out there that are paying $30 per person for like a quick service meal, and their mortgage costs have doubled and car insurance costs have soared and home insurance costs have soared, is there anything the Fed could and should do for them?
I don't think the Fed can do anything.
I don't think so either.
They're desperate to lower rates because of the national debt and because of commercial real estate and because of regional banking and probably because of the election. I mean, they are dying to lower rates. And you look at those stocks you had at the top of the hour, you're going through them. Normally, you see when things are when people are struggling, you see people go, "Okay, I can't go to McDonald's anymore." But then people move down from Applebee's to McDonald's. There's another group. We're not seeing that. The wealthy are just fine because, like you just said, inflation, we've got the asset prices are still up, right? Just had a killer fourth quarter. The stock market's holding up okay this year, all things considered. But the person just getting a paycheck and trying to put food on the table, they're really suffering now. And we've got this problem where what the Fed is doing is really going to have more of an impact on asset prices. But we have this real problem here where there's a whole group of people, the biggest part of the United States, getting squeezed. And I think they're trying to figure that out.
I don't know what the Fed can do about it other than lower rates, which could then restoke inflation. It's a pickle, it's a box, and it's tough. But we're glad you're here. Peter Malouk, Creative Planning. Thank you, as always. Really appreciate it.
Always good.
All right. So we just talked about the broader markets. Want to point out a little Frappuccino fact. Call this a mini RBI, if you will. We mentioned Starbucks, bless you, dropping 15% today, which means with that drop and its recent rise, Chipotle is now a bigger company than Starbucks for the first time ever. Call this burritos over baristas. And by the way, Chipotle is a good example that there are still pockets that are doing just fine. And I'm also looking at you, Wingstop. All right, up next. Are the markets pricing in another Trump presidency? Not our opinion. It's the curious move in a number of things that might be signaling a shift. And Chipwreck, the unstoppable trade, could it be hitting a speed bump? Let's get to tomorrow's news tonight. And first up, the Federal Trade Commission set to okay the $60 billion deal for Exxon to buy Pioneer Natural Resources. According to the Wall Street Journal, the companies reached an agreement with FTC regulators not to add former Pioneer CEO Scott Sheffield to its board of directors due to alleged, quote, collusive activity that could have raised the price of oil. Wonder what Scott, who's a really nice guy, by the way, has to say about that. Scott, if you're there, call in. Anyway, shares right now, Exxon down a little bit. Pioneer, as you might imagine, is higher. Next up, Carvana, Nirvana. Shares are surging after earnings. The company that will buy and sell used cars posted a first quarter net income of $49 million. That's not a lot of money, but when you compare it to a loss of $286 million the same period last year, it looks great. In the earnings press release, CEO Ernie Garcia said they delivered the best results in the history of the company. It's also heavily shorted, so you got a big pop there. And Qualcomm numbers also out, and shares the San Diego-based company, founded in 1909 by the Germans, popping on solid numbers. Now, John Ford spoke with Qualcomm president and CEO Cristiano Amon moments ago. Here's a slice of what he said.
The important story is not the size of the market. Exactly the fact that the percentage of users buying premium and high-tier devices, and that's where we are have a very differentiated position with Snapdragon, is increasing. And that's what we saw in the quarter and the results. Like one thing that we highlighted in China, in the first half, we're 40% year over year and projected that to continue in the guide that we provided for the following quarter. And is that because people are buying a premium device? Premium devices with Gen AI from our customers are doing well. And that has been a good story for us.
There's a lot more than that. You can catch more of John's interview on Closing Bell Overtime tomorrow. That is at 4 p.m. Eastern time. All right, let's take a look at some of the other semiconductor stocks right now. You got AMD down just a touch. You got NVIDIA, Taiwan Semi, Micron up just a touch after hours. But there's a lot more to this sector that is starting to go on under the proverbial hood. So let's bring in somebody's going to lift that lid. Christina Parts, just lift it up.
It's wide open right now.
Right open. Christina Parts and Evelyn.
It's going to say bear it all.
What were you going to say?
Nothing. Let's
bear
talk about chips.
All?
Let's talk about chips.
B-E-A-R.
Mm-hmm.
Bear it all. I mean, you're going to deal with all of it.
Yeah, so
that's what you
do. You want to start with just Qualcomm showing us that
this is your hit. You do you.
Qualcomm is showing us that this smartphone recovery is slowly underway. They also saw a lot of strength in auto, something that we haven't seen from like Texas Instruments, onsemi. So there was concerns that there would be
the car business, not a guy named Otto.
Correct. The car business, which actually increased 35% year over year for Qualcomm. They cater to the high end kind. They say that they're not as exposed to EVs. So that's why they're seeing some strength, especially with their autonomous driving systems that helps with, you know, sensors and cameras and all that. That pipeline's about $45 billion. So that's one part of the story.
Hold on. Is the auto industry an underappreciated part of the semiconductor story? We always just talk about AI.
No.
But we forget that cars are now just computers with tires.
Do you not remember what happened during COVID in 2020? That's why chips became so popular, because there was such a shortage of chips in the auto industry, because they decided that they were going to cut their orders and then they fell behind in the line and then they couldn't get it. And that's why prices went higher. So I think, if anything, the auto sector really brought to light the chip space and the supply shortage. Now, fast forward to, you know, 4 years later to today, to your point, yes, your car is going to be your computer, and this is going to play a big role, but it's highly competitive, because it's not just Qualcomm, it's not just onsemi, it's not just Wolfspeed. You've got Apple. Everybody's competing for the space. You're and within the car.
Quickly,
which is
what's the next
lagging
big story for semiconductors?
Well, unfortunately, NVIDIA still has the dominates all of the headlines.
How about Supermicro tanking today?
Yeah, but that tanking, but then go out on a full year basis and look at how the stock has climbed dramatically. We often focus on the minute details of these swings throughout the day. Supermicro makes servers, assembles them. Their earnings were strong, but they did say they saw some supply constraints, and yes, the market is getting more competitive. HPE, Dell, they also make servers, and that may impact Supermicro's gross margins, which is why you saw the stock down so dramatically. Expectations, though, are so high for so many of these names. It's like AI, 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 it's got to bring in all this money. We're not seeing that monetization just yet with all of these names that are promising to do so.
When you just did that, you know what I thought about? I thought about Gangnam Style. For That's some reason, like, the thing did the thing, and I was thinking, I don't know why, because I was thinking,
wow, we just went from like Gangnam Style, COVID, chips, bearing it all.
That's what I do. And your point on SMCI is well taken, but this is TV, and we have the attention span of a pigeon.
You have the attention span of a goldfish.
What?
Soaking, sorry.
What? Christina P., thank you very much. That's OBA. Offensive but accurate.
Oh, sorry. I'm going to get in trouble for that.
No, it's OBA.
No,
offensive but accurate.
Bosses,
you can use that
watching
at home.
Yeah.
All right. It has been a recent rough run for some investors, I mean very recently, in the AI trade. Take Meta, for example. Down 11% in just the past month. But again, longer platforms made people a lot of money. Similar story with Microsoft. Great longer-term run. Short term down about 7%. Overall, these so-called Magnificent Seven have not made you money in the past month. They made you a fortune before that. But in the last month, and all things have to start somewhere, right? So let's talk more about AI and where it's going, because your next guest is a guy, he's honestly one of the more interesting and definitely one of the smartest people I've ever had the privilege of meeting. He's also the author of a soon-to-be-released book called AI or Die. Why am I holding up the book when you got a graphic? AI or Die, a guide for business leaders and AI's impact on every aspect of our life, including finance, healthcare, education, and more. Jack Hittery is CEO of Sandbox AQ, an AI and quantum computing company spun out of Alphabet last year, working to dramatically speed the time to market for drug discovery using massive amounts of computing power.
Right.
Is that correct? What I just said is directionally correct.
Directly correct. AI for drug discovery, for new materials, for battery chemistry, for cyber. AI, and here's the point of the book, it's a do or die moment right now. And as you pointed out, yes, people look at the Magnificent Seven. Okay, recently, last few days, we had Microsoft earnings, we had Google earnings, we had Amazon earnings fueled by AI. The question, Brian, is how about the Fortune 500? How about the Global 1000? Right now, the next 24 months is going to be a do or die moment for them. Are the pharma companies going to use AI? Are the automotive companies going to use AI? Are the energy companies going to use AI? There's going to be winners.
The answer is yes to all.
And losers.
But you know, this is what your book is about. Chapter 11, implementing AI in your business. All these CEOs right now are like, I know how to run a train company. I don't know anything about AI. What do I do?
Yeah. And Brian, here's what's happening. If you, as an investor, ask the management teams of the biggest companies, are using AI in all these different sectors, they'll say, sure we are. But then you dig a little deeper, you find out, oh yeah, they're using AI to cut customer service costs. Great. They're using AI to generate marketing copy for the website. Great. But how about deeper in the company? The key is, can you use AI to transform how you develop your products, how you design the next car or airplane, how you design the drug? Right now, drug discovery takes 10, 15 years, 90% failure in clinical trials. That's the pharma companies today. there's going to be a handful of them that will be winners who will use AI to leapfrog those numbers and say, we're going to get to market faster, we're going to increase success rates, and we're going to have more profit.
Because I would imagine those companies that are going to be winners are those pharmaceutical companies that will use a company, Sandbox AQ.
You got it.
Right, because that's what you've been on before, and that's what you're going to do. Instead of this 10 years using humans, a lot of people get sick.
Yep.
Some people die. You're testing all this stuff on human beings.
Right.
Being able to use massive quantum computing power to replicate the immune system.
Create a virtual
reaction.
Human. Exactly, Brian. Create a virtual human using AI simulation, using the same GPUs we've talked about NVIDIA. We talked about NVIDIA before the big run-up. And so NVIDIA is the chip that is powering this, and we can create that AI simulation on those
quickly,
chips.
Quickly, will we have the electricity to power all these data centers, to power Sandbox AQ?
We need to use AI in the energy sector to create a new kind of grid. That's what we need.
I love it. The book is out in a couple of months, AI or Die, A Guide for Leaders. And I want to say 100% of the revenue, not profits, all the revenue, every dime.
Educational charity.
Is going to educational charity. That is good work.
Thank you,
Jack Hittery. Thank you very much.
Good to see you.
All right. Still ahead. Are the markets pricing in a win by the former guy? There are some signs. And the top market strategist who played the last Trump bull run years ago, a guy named Tom Lee, not the drummer. Come this way, Tom. You're walking right in front of the camera. He will join us next. Hey, Tom. AI, Tom, or die. Jack, thank you. We're back after this.
Bro.
All right, welcome back. We are still seven months out from the election. It's going to feel like 10 years, but it's only 7 months. But of course, wild speculation is already in full swing. And now the former guy, last name Trump, is starting to close the gap in some of the online prediction markets. Yes, the odds on political betting market predicted still show President Biden with a lead. But that lead is down a bit from a couple of weeks ago. And since the election really does only come down to about five or six states, we also got to look there. And the latest polling from Morning Consult showing that the former president leading in all but one of those so-called battleground states. Now, some polls will be different, but there you go. Of course, we are CNBC, so we're not doing this for just political reasons. Others do that. We mention it because it could matter to the markets and your money. Trump has said he wants lower interest rates. I mean, he is a real estate guy after all. And President Biden wants to let the entire 2017 tax cuts expire, which would jack up taxes on everyone if he is unable to redo it and carve out a provision for people making under $400,000. Remember, he said that, but it's not a sure thing. The whole thing expires. You have to start from scratch. And in the stock market, defense stocks keep moving up as the real risk of war is rising in the Middle East. Again, this is not a political segment. We'll leave that to others. But the election could certainly matter a lot to the markets, the economy, and your money. Joining us now is managing partner and the head of research at Fundstrat Global Advisors, Tom Lee. Again, not an advocate for one or the other, but if we start to see a shift, what will shift in the market?
Well, as you point out, markets, you know, investors have to think about, well, things could change in November. And to me, two areas that are obvious would be, I think oil prices would likely be lower because there'd be more drilling. Mm-hmm. So I think energy stocks would come under pressure. I think healthcare would come under pressure as well. And you should see a commensurate lift in groups like industrials. And, you know, as you talk about the Middle East war ramping up, oil should be going up, and it's not. So in a way, the fact that energy's done poorly does tell us something else might be at work.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what we're looking at. It's an excellent point, right? And you talk about maybe we somehow get to 15 million barrels a day in oil. Well, you're probably looking at $60, $65 oil.
Yep, that's right. Lower oil is great for consumers, but it does mean lower prices for oil, and it wouldn't be great necessarily for the energy complex.
And the president has said, now here's the disconnect. The president's people will say, and the president himself has said sometimes, I'm going to, you know, let the tax cuts expire for everybody but those making over 400,000. But the problem is that that's not how it works. It's an act. It's a rule. The whole thing has to expire. Then you have to start from scratch. And the president has said a number of times, and his team has posted it to Twitter, he's going to let the whole thing expire. So if we're facing down the barrel of higher taxes for everybody at the end of next year, minus the salt deduction cap, which I wouldn't mind seeing going away, by the way, personally, then what?
Yeah, and it, you know, it's not only could tax cuts expire, but you know, I think investors worry about a new plan that might include much higher capital gains taxes as well. So I think that that's...
You've talked about that.
Yeah, and I think that's going to send obviously a big chill to markets as well.
And higher corporate taxes. But are corporate taxes, which they're always like this boogeyman, people don't realize that corporate taxes, while important, are a small part of federal tax revenue. That said, they matter to the companies themselves. Would higher corporate taxes mean lower stock prices?
You know, there's going to be an optical confusion for investors because, you know, European corporates have much lower statutory tax rates. So over time, investors are going to look at U.S. and they're going to have earnings and they have to say, well, should I adjust the multiple because the tax rates are higher? But ultimately, it's not great for stocks because uncertainty creates discounts.
Do you expect the markets? I know you're still optimistic, still bullish, right? And you've been right. You've been long and strong and correct. Do you think we're going to kind of see what we saw in 2016, which is like a summer of nothing from the stock market? Summer's a slower time anyway.
Yeah.
But when you've got this election and these the two are within a percent, some polls are up, some are down. It doesn't matter. It's going to be close. We know that. Do you expect this people just say, you know what, selling may go away because I don't know what's going to happen in November?
Yeah, I think it is probably a three-phase year. You know, I think we're still in the up phase, so maybe May, June, we still rally. But I do think there's going to be a period of doldrums and adjustment. And then we rally, I know, sometime in the back half of the year. So I do think that middle part could be flat to down. Yeah.
Maybe once we get surety either way. Tom Lee, Fun Strat, great stuff. Thank you. All right, and make sure to join, by the way, the CNBC Financial Advisors Summit. It's on Wednesday, May 22nd. You're going to hear from really smart guys like Tom Lee and many others about the market, maybe the election, interest rates, what it all means. Scan the QR code or go to cnbcevents.com/FA. All right, on deck. Is the Florida housing market about to get swamped? A warning sign you got to hear. It is time for your Wednesday RBI, and today let's talk real estate, housing, and construction, because while nationally things mostly remain okay, we are starting to see pockets of pain. Wolf Street highlighting the housing markets where they consider a bubble is starting to pop. They did this by highlighting price drops from the 2022 housing market peak. Vegas and Dallas, just about 5% from their pandemic panic highs, not terrible. Phoenix, Denver, and Portland markets down about 6%. But look at Seattle and San Francisco. They are 10 and 12% off of their recent highs in 2022. That is painful for anybody who bought in those times if they have to sell anytime soon because they may be underwater on their mortgage. Now, to be fair, home prices in these areas are still way above 5 or 10 years ago. But those are big markets, and they are big markets to watch. And if we need more housing, and of course we do, we need a lot, here's some not-so-good news. Construction jobs are starting to tank. Schwab's Kevin Gordon tweeting this out just a couple of hours ago. Wow. The jobs opening rate for the construction industry tanked in March. It's the largest one-month drop on record. Now, until the robots take over, jobs tend to be a leading indicator of future activity. So this may not bode well for the building of new homes or new apartments or buildings. One does wonder, again, if these higher borrowing costs are finally starting to take their toll on the economy and the markets, what do you all think? Let us know. It's something to watch, and it's random, but interesting. And that leads us nicely to this. Some homeowners in Florida are starting to get burned, according to Redfin. The median time a home for sale now sits on the market is 57 days, and that is more than double the time of 2 years ago. It's also above the national median days on the market spent of 40. Plus, if you search for home listings in Florida with the word motivated in the description, he's a motivated seller, there are more than 5,600 available, and that dwarfs what we are seeing elsewhere. Redfin recently published their report on soaring supply, more homes in Florida, meaning people are selling, and its impact on home prices there. So is Florida a warning sign to other states, or really just its own thing? Joining us now is the person who led the study, Redfin chief economist Daryl Fairweather. Daryl, welcome back. Florida, during the pandemic, everybody tried to move there if they could. Prices soared. Prices are still well above where they were a couple of years ago. Is Florida, though, its own thing or the canary in sort of the national coal mine?
Florida is very unique. It was one of the only markets that sustained price growth even after interest rates went up. So I think this correction is just a bit overdue. It's also hitting at a time when HOA fees are going up and insurance costs are going up, and people don't want to pay these higher property taxes. So no, more new listings are coming on the market right now, too.
How much did the Airbnb boom during COVID impact the housing market? Because all I see are these articles about these Airbnb sellers starting to panic because they're not getting enough renters or, you know, whatever you bookers to pay their mortgage.
Yes, the travel market has changed a lot since the pandemic. Not as much domestic travel, but maybe more international travelers. But a lot of people who thought they were going to have this guaranteed Airbnb income that was quite high are finding out that it's really not enough to cover their expenses, their insurance, their mortgage, and they're getting out of the market.
We've been talking a lot about home insurance in Florida, in California, and other markets that are exposed to climate change or extreme climate risks or utility problems or whatever it might be. How much are these soaring home insurance costs starting to impact not just Florida, but also states like California?
Well, the insurance market, it's in a bit of a transformation. People all across the country are having their insurance costs go up. It's not just Florida. There are things like higher costs to rebuild and just their projections about risk are changing. So insurance costs are going up all over the country.
Yeah, and I wonder if there's any sign it's going to get better. I don't know, because it's also supposed to be an extremely active hurricane season this year. Daryl Fairweather of Redfin. Thank you, Daryl.
Thank you.
All right, coming up, Elon Musk announcing another round of layoffs at Tesla. Your next guest says these cuts reveal a little secret about the big man in charge. All right, welcome back. It's been a wild week for Tesla and some of its senior leadership, or should we say now some of its former senior leadership. Elon Musk laying off a number of key people, first reported by The Information. Today, Tesla's head of HR left, but unclear whether she was laid off or just left voluntarily. Comes after Tesla laid off roughly 10% of its workforce earlier this month. Musk reportedly telling employees in a memo that Tesla needs to be, quote, hardcore about its headcount. It obviously has not been a great year for Tesla investors. The stock is down about 27%. But what does this say about Musk's leadership style? Joining us now is RSE Ventures co-founder and CEO and Harvard Business School executive fellow Matt Higgins. Also got started a lot of companies, invests in a lot of companies. You know, Matt, when Musk bought Twitter, now known as X, and he laid off, or 80% of the staff either was laid off or left. Like, some people just left, some people were laid off. Everyone's like, well, that's it. You know, everyone's like, well, he's done. I mean, X is operating just fine now. What do you think about Musk's leadership style?
Well, let's break up the decision, right? I think substantively, the decision seems to make a good amount of sense. If you think about it, he built all this infrastructure anticipating a wave of demand that is not going to materialize. So what does he do? He scales back. Anybody who has a Tesla like I do, I've never had to wait for a supercharger. So I understand the idea that you're going to go and expand your existing infrastructure. The part that is showing cracks in his leadership style is this cultural immaturity around some of his behavior, right? First of all, any CEO knows you want to try to do layoffs in one time because it leaves a culture of insecurity and employees don't perform well when they are worried that they're going to wake up to a dear employee email. So he fired, laid off 14,000 people a couple of weeks ago, announced that, and then he turns around, does 500 layoffs. The second issue with Elon as a CEO is he seems to have trouble exhibiting empathy. At the end of the day, as a leader, when you have to make these difficult decisions, you have to demonstrate that it was a hard choice. And I think using a word like hardcore cost cutting is the opposite of empathy.
These are all good points. And it's got to be a lot of stress in running all these companies and doing what he does. But I'm sure Musk is a difficult person to kind of get to, right? Like, in terms of sort of say, hey, Elon, you could use a little more empathy on that, right? I mean, Tesla needs good people.
I think what we might be seeing, anyone out there who's done a bunch of things, and again, I don't take anything away from Elon Musk. He's obviously a genius and what he's in, but he's a catalyst, I think, more than an operator is what we're realizing. Because when you're an operator, you have to take the time to implement processes, including when you have to lay off a large number of people. You have to sit down, figure out how you're going to roll it out. How are we going to communicate to our staff? And so what I see, I could be wrong from afar. I'm also not his therapist. I don't see someone who's advising him, or maybe he's not taking that advice about how to do things a certain way. And that email that went out, it was a perfect opportunity to say, hey, I screwed up. Obviously, we've built this infrastructure. We have 500 people. At the moment, we're going to take a pause. I'm really sorry. Here's what we're doing for those people, your former colleagues. Instead, he did the opposite. Here's why it matters to shareholders. There's tons of research and data that shows that companies who institute layoffs, they tend to underperform for the next 3 years because what they thought was a catalyst can end up being a cancer.
We also want to end up make sure that you can hire people down the road. And if they say, well, this company tends, you know, they whacked a bunch of people, laid them off. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I agree, obviously, one of the greatest business creators of the modern history. And we'll see how this plays out. Matt Higgins, RSC Ventures. Matt, thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Let's lighten it up. Get to our quicker than the ticker. All the best of the rest of the headlines. Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Healthcare hack. United Health Group CEO Andrew Witty confirming to lawmakers today that the company paid $22 million in ransom to hackers after their big cyber attack in February. Speaking of paying, Johnson & Johnson paying $6.5 billion over 25 years to settle thousands of talc lawsuits. Lawsuits allege that talc-based products caused ovarian cancer. The settlement still needs to be approved. You tip, we tip. Domino's offering a new promotion to fight tip fatigue that offers customers a $3 coupon on a future order if they tip their delivery driver $3 or more. Wordle getting some new competition. LinkedIn rolling out free thinking-oriented games on its app or online. Company will feature word association games, logic, and trivia, and more. A bee delay. A bee colony above home plate delaying the LA Dodgers-Arizona Diamondbacks game for nearly 2 hours. Matt Hilton, a beekeeper, saved the day by spraying the hives to help get the game started. Very cool. Coming up, and start your engines. It is F1 race week in Miami. And one of America's leading restaurateurs, Mario Carbone, is here next. One of the hottest restaurant groups in America is gearing up for one of the hottest dining experiences in America. It is the third installment of American Express Presents Carbone Beach. It is a four-night supper club in the sand. Tickets are $3,000 a pop. There's food, cocktails, A-listers, and A-list entertainment. Starts tomorrow and is all ahead of Miami's big Formula One race this weekend. Let's talk about that, dining, and the rise of the private restaurant club. With the founders of Major Food Group, Chef Mario Carbone and Jeff Zelaznik, they rejoin us. And we got to stop meeting like this, guys, once a year. We love having you on all the time. Is this hot as ever? Have you seen any downturn in demand down there in the sand in Miami?
No, I mean, this year is crazier than ever. It seems like there's more enthusiasm, more excitement. I think that Carbone Beach has really become synonymous with Miami F1. And this year, you know, is proving to be looking like it's going to be bigger, better, and more exciting than ever.
Yeah, I mean, we're showing some of the video. It looks absolutely spectacular. Mario, you guys took a big chance with this, kind of a new thing, rolling something out with your partner, American Express. What has been, as an entrepreneur, you're a chef, but you're also an entrepreneur and a business person. What has been, Mario, the biggest surprise in doing this event now going on the third year?
Yeah, I think, you know, our biggest surprise was really the demand. I think, you know, at first we wanted to really, you know, produce something on the level that the weekend really demanded. Formula One, the biggest weekend of the year here in Miami. And as a sort of co-host for the weekend, we wanted to produce something that was just as big. So we dreamed it, and it's one of those things, you know, if you build it, they'll come. And we dreamed it, we dreamed big, and thankfully we've been able to pack the house every year so far.
Well, I don't think you guys are any strangers to packed houses, by the way. I mean, you look at your entire restaurant group, Major, you have Carbone and ZZ's and everything else. It has just been spectacular. Are you, and we talk a lot about inflation on the show, and I know you guys mostly service the higher end clientele, Jeff, but are you seeing any slowdown? I mean, inflation has just been ravaging a lot of other restaurants not named major food group.
Listen, we've been very fortunate. Our customers are all, you know, excited by all the places that we've opened. They're here. You know, frankly, they're spending more than ever. People are celebrating more than ever, really indulging in more expensive wines, steaks. And we're seeing that really all the way across the portfolio. And I think, you know, Carbone Beach is a great example of that. But we really see that, you know, throughout, you know, all of our restaurants, you know, and, you know, throughout Miami, New York, and throughout the rest of the world.
Yeah. And Mario, the other thing that I want to talk about is the rise of the private club. And I don't mean private clubs like the old school, you know, university club and things like that, or even the Soho House. It's like ZZ's. And I'm blessed in my position to have some friends that are founders and members of ZZ's, and I'll happily ride their coattails into the door anytime. But you do wonder, you know, this whole idea of a private restaurant club with an entrance fee. Is there any limit to people's willingness these days to pay for not only amazing food and service, but also privacy?
Well, absolutely. There is a limit. And I think that's where execution has to come in. That's where all of our efforts put into the finest food and beverage experiences, to taking the most amazing care of our guests, to really coddling them, to curating their experiences. That's where there's an elastic amount of money, right? If you can provide the highest level of service, then you have something that's in great demand. I think there is absolutely a limit. It's really within your control if you can create the product that has the demand for that.
Yeah, and for our viewers that may not be familiar with it, they're basically ZZ's. It's kind of a club. There's an entrance fee, an annual dues to get in the door, and it's rarefied air. Jeff, do you see this being a model that could work down market just a little bit, you know, or will it always sort of be in the New Yorks and the Miamis of the world?
I think like anything else, I mean, I think it's a trend that you see right now, you know, has obviously become, you know, very, very popular in New York. You see people differentiating themselves with different things. We've obviously differentiated ourselves, you know, with food, beverage, and service. You know, and I think that as you continue to see expansion in the major cities, just like everything else, you'll start to see a lot of other cities that have, you know, demand for the private club environments. I think that what people are realizing is that, you know, they appreciate the privacy, they appreciate the sense of community, and they also really appreciate the fact that we're able to cater to them and tailor to their needs in a way that we can in a public restaurant setting.
Well, lucky enough to know some people that go, and it's an unbelievable.
Can't wait to see that.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable time if you can do it. Mario, Jeff, good luck with this Carbone at the Beach with American Express. Really appreciate you guys taking some time for us here, and folks, thank you. And by the way, if you can't make it to Miami, they do have a retail side of the business, and I'm just telling you, you got Carbone, $100, and I'll drink Kyle, $100, I'll drink this right now.
Done.
Really? Done. I want to see the cash. Before that, I'm kidding. I won't do it. Anyway, check out some of that new non-sponsored. I want to be clear on this, by the way. We're just nice. All right, very quickly. Do you know what happened 83 years ago today? Don't say I was born. One of the most famous movies hit the big screen.
Rosebud.
Citizen Kane. One of the best American movies. Also, a box office flop. That's an RBI. There you go. Amazing stuff, folks. Thanks for joining us here on Last Call. Really appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow night. Take care.